Hello, we're going to finish our study on Samson today. Would you turn to Judges chapter 15 and 16, and let's continue our study of this very interesting Mr. Universe of the Old Testament, huh? Chapter 15, verse 1. But after a while, in the time of the wheat harvest, now this would be somewhere between May and June, it would kind of vary from year to year, it came about that Samson visited his wife with a young goat. Now, you say, why would he take a young goat to see his wife? Well, apparently it was for a party or a banquet or something, like you would take a flowers to your special girl, and said, I will go into my wife in her room. But her father did not let him enter. And her father said, I really thought that you hated her intensely, so I gave her to your companion. Is not her younger sister more beautiful than she? Please let her be yours instead. Now, this seems to be that the Philistine best man got the girl. And Samson is really going to be upset about this. The father seems to have the same view about women that Samson does, and that is, you just pick them by how they look. He says, isn't the younger one prettier? Just take her. Some say he didn't want to give back the dowry. I'm not sure what the deal was. Maybe, if Samson really is as strong as he tends to act here, I mean, physically looking, I wouldn't want to make him mad either, would you? So he offers the younger daughter. Samson then said to them, this time I shall be blameless. Now, blameless is the word used for sacrifice, of course. And what Samson says, I have a right to avenge myself in regard to the Philistines when I do them harm. And that's the whole purpose of two accounts, is God wanted to show the Israelites they had to stand up to the Philistines. Now, the Philistines were not mean to them. Quite the contrary. Help them. I'm sure there's an economic relationship. They were selling their goods, being traders. But the truth was, they were taking them over subtly but surely. So God's going to bring it to a head through Samson. Now, Samson went and caught 300 foxes. Now, there's been much discussion about commentators. You can't catch that many foxes. There aren't that many foxes in this part of the world. I don't know. The Hebrew word for foxes is the same as the Hebrew word for jackals. And it's probably jackals. And he took torches and turned them tail to tail and put one torch in the middle between the two tails. Well, it's obvious that Samson wouldn't be a member of the local cruelty to animal society, but what he did, he did. Can you almost see this guy trying to keep all these foxes in one place and tie their tails together? It must have been hilarious. Then he had set five of the torches. He released the foxes in the standing grain of the Philistines. Now, the Septuagint, which is followed by King James, has the word corn here. Thus burning up both the shocks, the standing grain, along with the vineyards and the groves. Now, what this meant is, for an agricultural community, this was a disaster. Some of the grain was already cut, and it was in shocks in the field, drying. Others of the grain had not been cut yet. It burnt down all of that. It also burnt down the vineyards, the grapevines, which took years to produce. Cut down, burnt the olive trees, which took years to produce and prune. Now, folks, they had to have these trees for the next crop, and the grain, they had to keep part of it for the seed for the next year. It was a major disaster. Well, I mean, a major economic disaster here. Philistines said, who did this? And they said, Samson, the son-in-law of the Timonite, because he took his wife and gave her to his companions. So the Philistines came up and burned her and her father with fire. Now, isn't that irony? Back in chapter 14, verse 15, that's what the men threatened to do to her if she didn't find out Samson's riddle. And now the very thing she was afraid of and her father tried to avoid is the very thing that happened. Now, so they burned her, they burned her father, and just like the threat. Now, they were doing it to appease Samson. Did it appease Samson? No, it really made him mad and gave him more of a reason to inflict the Philistines even more. Now, and Samson said to them, since you act like this, I will surely take revenge on you, but after that I will quit. Now, this is limited revenge. This is still the eye for an eye, Old Testament concept kind of thing. And he struck them ruthlessly. Now, my marginal note says leg and thigh, kind of like hip and thigh. Why, that's a metaphor. He struck them hip and thigh. What does that mean? Well, the thigh is the strongest muscle in the body, and it's to hit it meant to cripple somebody, both in battle and just in fighting. And so it's a symbol of really hurting somebody severely, ruthlessly, okay, with great slaughter. And he went down and lived in the cleft of the rock at Etham. Now, there are two Ethams, and both of them are in the southern area, one in Judah, one more over in the Philistine area. Which it is, we're just not sure. But it was kind of like a stronghold up in the rocks. The Philistines went up and camped in Judah and spread out in Lehi. Now, Lehi is going to have a name that's very important in just a few verses. Now, Samson's not from Judah. He's from Dan. But he was hiding in Judah, apparently. So here come the Philistines, and the people of Judah said, "Man, what do you want? What's the matter? What's the problem?" The men of Judah said, "Why have you come up against us?" And they said, "We've come up to bind Samson in order to do to him as he did to us." You catch the eye for an eye thing happening here? They do something to you, I do something to them. They do something to you, I do something to them. That's what's a building here. Then 3,000 men of Judah went down to the cleft of the rock at Etam and said to Samson, 3,000 Judeans went. "Do you not know that the Philistines are our rulers?" There's the problem. They didn't realize that. They didn't realize the problem it was causing. The amalgamation of the religions, the ethical problem. "What then is it you have done to us?" And he said to them, "As they did to me, so I have done to them." Eye for an eye kind of thing again. Verse 12. And they said to him, "We have come down to bind you so that we may give you into the hand of the Philistines." And Samson said to them, "Swear to me you will not kill me." Now some say, see, Samson was afraid. You know, I picture this guy a lot of things. But afraid's not one of them. I think the Spirit of the Lord came upon him when he was hurt or wounded or got excited. I don't know if you watched the movie The Incredible Hulk, you know, when the guy turns into the green monster. I think something like that must have happened to Samson when the Lord came upon him. I think he's more afraid of these Judeans hurting him and the Spirit of the Lord coming on him and him hurting them, all of them, than he is about himself. But you have to decide. And they said, "We won't kill you." So they tied him up with two new ropes, okay? And then they came to Lehi. The Philistines shouted as they met him. The Spirit of the Lord came upon him mightily, so that the ropes that were on his arms were as flax that is burned with the fire. They just melted off, kind of. And he found a fresh jawbone of a donkey. Now, what would a fresh jawbone of a donkey be doing laying around there? Just this. The fact that it was fresh meant that it wasn't old and brittle. It was probably there because they used the jawbone of donkeys for plows. And that's probably why it was there. So he reached out, took it, and he killed 1,000 men with it. Now, you've got to be really riled up to kill 1,000 men with the jawbone of a donkey. You've got to be a tough dude, don't you? Look at this little thing, verse 16, a little ditty, a little poem. "With the jawbone of a donkey, heap upon heaps with the jawbone of a donkey." Now, that doesn't make any sense to us, but in Hebrew, there's a play on the word donkey and a play on the word heap, same consonants. So it's kind of a rhyme. "He made heaps of bodies with the jawbone of a donkey." That's the play there. "And killed 1,000 men." Now, they go out and count the bodies. 1, 2, 3. No, it's a round number. He killed Philistines. They were laying everywhere. 1,000. Now, this little rhyme here has been done several different ways. Let me read for you Moffat's translation. Here again, this little book on the 26 translations of the Bible sure is going to be helpful for you. I hope you'll get that. Here's Moffat's translation. "With the jawbone of an ass, he piled them in a mass." This is a translation known as the Barney translation, the Bernie translation. "With the red ass's jawbone, I have reddened them right red." You catch the attempt to try to play on these words? "And it came about when he had finished speaking that he threw the jawbone from his hand, and he named the place Ramoth Leah." Now, what that means is Ramoth is height, high place, and Leah means jawbone. See, it was called Leah, but you catch it was called Leah because the jawbone of that donkey was used to kill all these Philistines. So the name was read earlier into the account. Now, verses 18 through 20 is so unusual. It's one of the few times where we see Samson talking to God. But it's such a ridiculous conversation. It reminds me of what happened to Elijah after Mount Carmel when he said, "Oh God, nobody cares for you but me, and they're out to kill me, and I'm all alone, and just take my life." Listen to what Samson says. Very much like that. Same kind of attitude. "Then he became very thirsty." Well, if you kill 1,000 guys with the jawbone of an ass, I guess it would make you a big thirst. "And he called to the Lord, Yahweh, and he said, 'Hast thou given a great deliverance by the hand of thy servant, and now I'm to die of thirst?'" Boy, doesn't that make sense? God, did you leave me out here to kill all these Philistines, and now I'm so thirsty I'm just going to die? Now that's really something, isn't it? And fall into the hands of the uncircumcised. Now, some say, again, he was physically afraid. I just don't picture Samson physically afraid. I think he was worried about not being buried. Being unburied was a terror to the Jews, even worse than death. Look at Deuteronomy 21:23. To be unburied was the ultimate shame. I think that's what Samson was worried about more than something else. But God, now notice in verse 18, it's the word Lord, all caps, Yahweh. In verse 18, it's the word God, capital G, Elohim. These are the two names used in Genesis 1 and 2 to describe creation. The Jews say that the covenant name speaks of God and His mercy, and Elohim speaks of God as creator. I think there's truth in that. I like that better than the JEDP theory of source criticism. But God split the hollow of the place, that is at Lehi, so that the water came out of it. Now, God miraculously gave him water. Then he drank, his strength returned to him, and he revived. Therefore, he named the place, and we see to him whom the spring is, which is in Lehi to this day. To this day, that shows an editor. It shows that somebody compiled this. We don't know exactly who. Somebody wrote it, and they say unto this day, this spring is still there that God gave for Samson. Now, let's continue then, if we could, in verse 20. So he judged Israel 20 years in the days of the Philistines. Much more is happened than is recorded here. But if we get the gist of what happened, it was just a risque kind of story. Now, I'm not sure if chapter 16 is in chronological order. They both end with the same thing, about 20 years peace through Samson. Whether they happen the same time or one happens earlier, we just can't tell. But chapter 16 gives you another example of Samson's character. Okay? As it says, and so Samson went to Gaza. Now, Gaza, if you look at this map again, you have one in your Bible. It's another one of those five cities of the Philistines. They form a little circle on the southern Judean coastline. It's almost like he's taunting them. He's the chief enemy of the Philistine. And he's wiped out Philistines. He's known for it. And he's going to a Philistine city. It's almost like he's mocking them, isn't it? Picking a fight. Went to Gaza. It's about 36 miles from Samson's hometown. And saw a harlot there. Now, he's going to be involved with this harlot. One of many passages in Proverbs. You ought to see Proverbs 7, verse 6 through 27, that tells about the problems of this. There is a double standard in the Old Testament, but wisdom literature of the Old Testament says that if you listen to the words of a harlot, you're a fool. It says to enjoy the wife of your youth. And so here's Samson. He's still a lustful person, and he goes into this harlot in Gaza. It's almost like he went there to cause trouble. When it was told to the Gazaites, which are the inhabitants of that city, Philistines, Samson has come here. They surrounded the place and lay in wait for him all night at the gate of the city. Now, there's some confusion in the text. Did they lay a siege to the house where the harlot lived, or were they watching the gate? Well, it seems they were at the gate. The gates were closed at night, so no one come in or out. Maybe they were waiting at the gate to catch him. Samson must have known something was up, okay? And so, Samson lay until midnight, and at midnight he arose and took hold of the doors of the city gate, the two of the posts, and pulled them up along with its bars. Then he put them on his shoulders and carried them up to the top of the mountain, which is opposite Hebron. Now, if you look at your map, it is a long way from Gaza to Hebron. Now, the doors of these cities would have been massive for carts to come through. Huge doors in the walls. There's been two views of commentators. One say there was a smaller door in one of these bigger doors so that after dark someone could knock on the door, and there was enough room for just a person to come through. Not a camel, not a wagon, but just a person. And it's this door that Samson ripped out. Others say no, he ripped out the whole city gate. Now, it says he carried it up the hill. If it means that he carried these huge doors up the hill and laid them down, I can see that because he's incredibly strong. But if he went all the way to Hebron, which is miles away, I think it's probably the smaller door. It may be that he took it up the hill on the road to Hebron, not all the way to Hebron. My goodness. Now, it doesn't say the Spirit of the Lord came upon him, but that's the implication, you know, that he had this kind of strength. After this, it came about that he loved a woman in the valley of Sorek. That's a kind of a grape. I believe it's a very beautiful red grape. It's known for its famous grapes. whose name was Delilah. We think it means worshiper or devotee. So here's another woman he was involved with. And the lords of the Philistines came up to her. Now, it's obvious that this affair with her had been going on quite a while. All of these major chiefs of each one of these Philistine cities came to her and said, "Lady, we'll make a deal with you. We know Samson likes you. He comes here all the time. We want you to do this for us, and we'll pay you for it." That's what's the implication here. Entice him and see where his great strength lies and how we may overpower him, that we may bind him to afflict him. They apparently thought his strength was magic. And they want to know the chant or the what will magic thing will bind him. That's what they're implying. Notice it says in verse end of verse 5, "We will each give you 1,100 shekels of silver." Now, does that mean each of the ones will give her 1,100 or all five of them will combine to give her 1,100? Well, it's uncertain from the text. So Delilah said to Samson, "Please tell me where your great strength is and how you may be bound to afflict you." Now, you know, Samson's got to be a fool to listen to a girl ask a question like that. "Where is your vulnerability? How can I hurt you?" And she does it three times. And he tells her false things twice. And Samson's got to be a nerd. Or is Samson still trying to find a way to cause trouble with the Philistines and beat them up? I'm not sure which it is. And Samson said to her, "If you bind me with seven fresh cords..." Now, the RSV has bowstrings, which would be catgut intestines. "I have been dried, I shall become weak." So the lords of the Philistines brought up to her seven fresh cords that had not been dried, and she bound him. Now, he was either drunk out of his mind, he was asleep, and while he was asleep, she did this to him. And she had men lying in wait in the inner room, and she said to him, "The Philistines are upon you, Samson." But he snapped the cords of the spring and with its as if it had touched the fire, so his strength was not discovered. Now, here's the thing I think is happening. I think Delilah is playing like she's trying to save him. And she's saying, "They're coming for you." And he wakes up or comes out of a stupor and he breaks his bonds and jumps out the window and runs away. But he still thinks Delilah helped him. I don't think he thinks that she is trying to hurt him, or he sure wouldn't tell her the truth. Doesn't make sense. Unless Samson thinks he's trying to find an occasion to fight the Philistines. So Delilah said, "Oh, you really don't love me. You just tell me lies." Look at verse 10. And on she goes and begs and pleads him. So he says, well, it's new ropes that bind him. So she gets him drunk again or whatever and binds him with new ropes and says, "They're upon you." And these men rush in and Samson breaks them and runs out. Verse 13. And Samson said, Delilah said to Samson, "Up to now you've deceived me. You've told me lies. And how may you be bound?" And he said to her, "If you weave seven locks of my hair in a web..." Now look at verse 13. My New American Standard shows that the end of verse 13 and part of verse 14 is not in the Masoretic text or the Hebrew translation, but it's only in the Septuagint, the Greek translation. It's added here, and you fasten it with a pin and all that. Now, apparently he goes to sleep. Delilah weaves his hair. Now, what I see in my mind is she's brought a loom of some kind in there. And his hair is attached to this loom with a pin. And so he wakes up, and this loom, he's dragging this loom around with him, loom. And so he pulls the pin to let himself go. Don't you know, that must have been some sight for Samson, with his head in a weaving loom. My soul. Well, again, it didn't work, and she pressed him daily. Look at verse 15 and 16. His soul was annoyed to death. It kind of sounds like chapter 14, 17. He likes women, but he's not very good with them. He has one that cried for 7 days on the wedding party, and here's one who pressed him so hard, he finally says, "Get off of my back." And in verse 17, he spills the truth. She knows it. The Nazarite vow of number 6. He's broken every vow except one, his hair. Do you think Samson knew that if he lost his hair, his strength would go? I don't think so. See, he had drank wine, apparently, and hadn't affected him. He had touched dead bodies. It hadn't affected him. I bet he didn't know it was in the hair. He was violating another part of the Nazarite vow, but I don't know if he knew it was in the hair or not. Maybe just another trick he was trying to say. I don't know. But it's what really happened. She knew apparently he thought this was connected some way, but how, I'm not sure. And she knew he was telling the truth. And so she called the Philistines. They came and gave her all the money and put it in her hand. And she made him sleep on her knees and called for the men to have him shaved. Now here, is he drunk or asleep? It's hard for me to believe he could sleep through his hair being cut, but apparently he did. And some men came in and did it, apparently those who were involved in being a barber, and they shaved his head. And when she began to afflict him, his strength left him. Now, afflict him, I guess, means sound the alarm, call for the men to come in. I'm not real sure. It seems to be a parallel with verse 9, 12, and 14. And she said, "The Philistines are upon you, Samson." Listen to this. "He awoke from his sleep and said, 'I will go out as the other times and shake myself free.'" Listen to this. "But he did not know that the Lord had departed from him." Isn't that sad? Samson didn't even know the Lord had left him. That's why I think I'm not sure he knew that hair was the key to this thing. It's not the hair was magical, of course. It was just a symbol of the covenant with Yahweh. He had broken everything else but this. I think he had a hint, but I don't think he knew it. So he tried to throw these guys off, and guess what? He couldn't do it. Look what they did to him. The Philistines seized him, gouged out his eyes, which is common in that day. We have several accounts in the Kings where some of the Judean kings who were captured, eyes were put out. They brought him down to Gaza, one of the main cities of the Philistines, bound him in bronze chains, and made him a grinder in a prison. Now, really, animals are not used as grinding until the 5th century B.C. This was a hand grinder of some kind. This was normally the work of slaves or women. This place of Gaza was the very city where he tore the doors off of the city earlier. And now he's in the prison grinding corn for the prison to eat. And the Lord wasn't with him. However, the hair on his head began to grow again. Now, is the hair magical or is it a symbol? I think it's a symbol. I don't think there's anything in the power of his hair. It's in his repentant prayer to God to smite these Philistines and cause another international incident so that the Jews will continue to fight with him. I think that's it. Now, the lords of the Philistines assembled to offer a great sacrifice to Dagon. Now, Dagon, the Jews later called him a fish god from a Hebrew word that seems to be related to fish. But there's an earlier source of this. We learned from some of the empires of the Fertile Crescent, being Assyria and Babylon and Persia, that there is a Dagon deity that seems to be related to the fertility cult. We also learned from the Rosh Shamra text, the Canaanite text, that there is a god called Dagon that's the father of Baal. So I'm not exactly sure the etymology. It seems to be a storm god or a grain god or later on a fish god. But I'm not sure if we really know. But it was the chief god of the Philistines. What the Philistines did, they took on the Canaanite deities and began to worship them when they moved in the Canaanite area. Okay, they didn't bring their gods from the Greek islands with them. "Our God has given Samson, our enemy, into our hands. When the people saw him, they praised their God, for they said, 'Our God has given our enemy into our hands, even the destroyer of our country.'" You catch what they thought of him. "Who has slain many of us." So it happened when they were in their high spirits. Now what does that mean? Crocked. "That they said, 'Call for Samson, that we may amuse us.' So they called for Samson from the prison, and he entertained them." Now what that means, whether they made him fight with animals or do tricks or they're just make poke him with sticks. We're not sure what they did. "And they made him stand between the two pillars of the temple. And Samson said to the boy who was holding his hand," now apparently he was led about by a boy because he's blind now, "'Let me feel the pillars on which the house rests.'" Now picture this in your mind. We've learned archaeologically this is a true archaeological representation of some of the Canaanite temples. There are these major pillars and there's a roof. Underneath the roof is where the dignitaries sit because it's covered in case of weather. On the roof is where all the devotees, the other worshipers, are. They had Samson somehow chained between two of these pillars that held up the roof on which all these people were. You catch what's going to happen? "And the house was full of men and women and all the lords of the Philistines." Friends, all of the leaders of the Philistines are here, apparently from all five cities. Samson's going to wipe out the total leadership as well as all those who are really committed to this Dagon. "Were there. About 3,000 men and women were on the roof looking on while Samson was amusing them." 3,000 men and women on the roof, the leaders underneath the roof, okay? "And Samson called to the Lord," called to Yahweh, the covenant name for God, "and said, 'O Adonai, Master, Adonai, Yahweh, please remember me and please strengthen me just this time, O Elohim, all three names for God, Adonai, Yahweh, and Elohim, right in verse 28. Call God by every name he knew, that I may once again be revenged of these Philistines for my two eyes. He may have still had a selfish reason, but I think God was in it. And Samson grabbed the two middle pillars on which the house rested and braced himself against it, one with his right and one with his left. And Samson said, let me die with the Philistines. He must have shouted that. And he bent with all his might so that the house fell on the lords, the leaders underneath, and all the people who were on top of it, all those on top, 3,000. So the dead whom he killed at his death were more than those whom he killed in his life. Boy, he killed a bunch in his life, 1,000 at one time we know of. So here, 3,000 plus dies, 3,000 on the roof. There's more underneath. I don't know exactly how many that is. Then his brothers and his father's household came down, took him, brought him up, buried him between his hometown in the tomb of his father, and thus he judged Israel 20 years. It's very important that he be buried with his father. Now that means that he was in probably the family tomb, laid with the other relatives there. It was a symbol of being joined together with his family in Sheol. And here we see the tragedy of the life of Samson. Gifted by God, but abused it. Now, from the very beginning, God knew the kind of man he would be, and he used that. But Samson is still responsible, and he paid a terrible price. No happy marriage, physically abused, terrible hurt for his own family. Yes, he paid a price. Sin always runs its course. God can sometimes use evil for his purposes, but Samson's responsible. What a tragedy of a misused life. What an encouragement that God can use a man like Samson. That God can take our faults and failures and sometimes even use them for his glory and honor. That's our hope. Samson's life, our life, is our shame. May God be with you, that you walk before him in strength and power. And that the Spirit is not just something that comes upon us to do selfish things of violence, but as we know now, will lead us into the fullness of Christ's likeness. I've enjoyed being with you. God bless you. I'll see you again. Same time, same place, this week.